to Marissa's Wicked Word Nosh, a place to chow down on topics relevant to writers of all kinds. Hello, and welcome to Marissa's Wicked Word Nosh. I'm Marissa, and this is a bi-weekly podcast in which I talk about a wide variety of writing-related and reading-related topics. I wasn't sure if I could refer to a podcast that comes out every 2 weeks as bi-weekly, because I thought the term bi-weekly referred to something that came out twice a week. But according to Merriam-Webster, you can use bi-weekly to refer either to something that comes out twice a week, or once every 2 weeks, or fortnightly, which is how this podcast is now coming out. And the reason this podcast is not now coming out fortnightly or biweekly, because it was coming out weekly up until the beginning of this month, is that I recently started a new podcast. That one is called The Victorian Variety Show, and I'm also going to be doing that one on a fortnightly basis. The first episode of that podcast came out last week. And although I intend for it to be more history-focused than this one is, even though I believe you absolutely need to consider history when you look at a style or a piece of writing or you want to focus on a writer, my first episode is on penny dreadfuls, which I would argue are not only a valid type of literature with an interesting story behind them, but they inspired some forms of writing and writers that many of us are familiar with today. To give you just two examples, Bram Stoker was one of them in creating Dracula, and Pulp Fiction, which I did an episode of this podcast on several months ago. So I'll include a link to that episode of the Victorian Variety Show in the notes for this one, if you would like to check it out. So going back to what I was just saying about how we need to look at history when we talk about a type of writing, we're going to be doing some of that this week. I'm going to look at a style of poetry called Jisei, which I've actually wanted to talk about for some time. And I'm actually very excited to be doing this podcast as a result of that. If you follow me on Twitter, you might have picked up on the fact that I'm a fan of a lot of things Japanese. I'm by no means an expert on Japanese history, but I took a class on it in college, and since then I've been interested in Japanese history, art, and culture, and have tried to learn more on my own. This past winter, I read two books on characters from Japanese folklore that were written by a writer called Christopher Kincaid that I was really impressed with. I looked up Kincaid's website to see what else he's done, and I found an article on Jisei there called Jisei, the Japanese Death Poem, which I'll include a link to in the notes, along with the other sources that I mentioned in this episode. But I want to take a moment now to emphasize that I'm going to talk about death in this episode. And at one point, I do get graphic. I'll let you know when that's coming up. Even though in his article, Kincaid begins by referring to Jisei as the, quote, farewell poem to life, end quote. So, if death is a topic you're not comfortable with, you may want to sit this one out. And also, I want to apologize in advance for any mistakes I might make in pronouncing any of the Japanese words or names in this episode. My Japanese language skills are not very good, even though I do hope to improve them in the future. And although I tried finding pronunciations of the Japanese words in this episode online, I wasn't able to find examples for all of them, unfortunately. So, Jisei is a tradition that extends all the way back to the 7th century in Japan. And according to Gail Walters Rose in an article called Jisei, Japanese Death Poems, it was also practiced in China and Korea. I don't know much more about Chinese or Korean forms of death poetry, but who knows? Maybe I'll do some more research and do a future episode on one or both of them. Kincaid explains that these poems were short, but they could be written in several forms. One of those forms is one that you might be familiar with already, especially if you've been listening to this podcast for some time, because I did an episode on this. Actually, I think this was one of my first episodes. Haiku, which consists of 17 syllables, also known as own, in three lines, which make up two images that are divided by a quote-unquote cutting word called a kireji. However, these poems could also be written as tankas, which Rose explains consist of 31 syllables broken down into five lines, usually five syllables, seven syllables, five syllables, and then two more lines of seven syllables each. And those five lines are often written as one single unbroken line. Jisei poems were most commonly written by nobles and rulers, as well as monks and samurai. Not so much due to the class or status of these individuals, but more so because they were normally the most literate members of ancient Japanese society. In a piece called Jisei, The Art of Japanese Death Poems, Cesare Jan Strusiewicz suggests that they were written as short poems largely for practical reasons. Centuries ago, it was common for people to learn to read and write by studying poems and lyrics. Also, I think when something is in that form, that makes it easier to pass on to others, say, relatives or community members of the deceased. I'm thinking of folk ballads, which, I'm sorry for all the plugs, but I also did an episode on folk ballads a few months ago. I mentioned that those were easy to memorize and share with your friends and relatives, whether or not you or they could read, around a campfire or a pub table, say, during the Middle Ages. It's kind of the same idea here, and I apologize if this is a corny example, but this should make it clear. I can picture a samurai penning a tanka or haiku prior to committing suicide by seppuku, and this is where it gets graphic. Seppuku is another term for harakiri. It is ritual disembowelment, which is normally associated with samurai. I could picture a samurai warrior writing one of these poems prior to committing seppuku and instructing an apprentice to take it to his family and read it to them afterwards. But considering that these poems were written at the end of the poet's life, in many cases probably while the poet was literally on their deathbed, I think their shortness is one of the things that makes them so powerful. As Kincaid puts it, quote, Jisei seeks to transcend thought and create an ah, now I see moment, end quote. And I think it's often easier to do that with fewer impactful words than it might be with longer stanzas that are likely to require more extensive interpretation. It's important to say here that many of these poems either didn't mention death directly, and in those that did, the focus instead tended to be more on short but vivid metaphors, such as dreams of becoming ill, withered fields and flowers, falling dew and cherry blossoms, as well as imagery invoking the sky, maybe the moon, the climate, and the seasons. A good example here is one from Matsuo Bashū, a well-known Japanese poet who lived in the 17th century. Quote, falling ill on a journey, my dreams go wandering over withered fields, end quote. According to Rose, it was commonly believed, quote, that at one's final moment of life, one's reflection on death, one's own usually, but also death in general, could be especially lucid and meaningful, and therefore also constitute an important observation about life. End quote. In other words, one's death poem could leave those they left behind with important insights not only about their own life, but about life in general. For this reason, it's important to stress that these poets probably didn't use euphemisms in talking about death out of a desire to avoid it. In fact, Kincaid explains that acceptance was an essential component of these poems. Strusiewicz suggests that this type of acceptance is rooted in the Zen acceptance of life, which includes seeing the material world as ephemeral and death as an inescapable part of life. Kincaid adds that in Japanese language in general, the word death, or she, is rarely used to refer to someone. It's more common to refer to the way in which they died, which has the effect of giving us more of an idea of the kind of life that they lived. Some examples of this include shinju, or lover's suicide, junshi, which refers to a warrior dying for their lord, senshi, death in war, or roshi, death from old age. Another thing about these poems that I think is noteworthy is that they weren't all written in the same tone. Some, as you might imagine, were dark. Others, especially those written by samurai warriors, express characteristics such as strength and honor. As Martini Fisher writes in The Honorable Death, Samurai and Seppuku in Feudal Japan, a samurai would intend for their jisei to, quote, serve as a written glimpse into his nobility of character and how he wished to be remembered after his death, end quote. And some of them were light and maybe even humorous, such as this one by Moriya Senan in 1838. Quote, bury me when I die, beneath a wine barrel, in a tavern. With luck, the cask will leak. End quote. I really like that one. I don't know about you, but that's my type of humor. Although most of the examples of jisei that I came across in my research were written several centuries ago, this practice has continued into modern times. In 1945, a Japanese general named Tadamichi Kuribayashi wrote a final letter in which he apologized for his force's failure to defend Iwo Jima against the U.S. military. He also praised his men for their bravery in battle. And at the end of the letter were three short poems that were written in the Jisei tradition. And in 1970, a renowned writer with strong right-wing sympathies, Yukio Mishima, wrote several death poems prior to an attempt to overthrow Japan's post-World War II constitution and restore the emperor's power. Mishima committed seppuku shortly after the coup failed. So, we can see how deeply entrenched jisei is in Japanese culture. And although it's very different from what we may be used to in the West, I really like the idea of jisei. I see a lot of the same logic behind jisei and the death acceptance movement advocated by Caitlin Doughty, among others. I think, at least in the United States, that due to our inclination to medicalize and hide death as much as possible, we tend to see those who are close to death as weak and helpless. But jisei shows the opposite, I think, that facing death in this way actually requires a type of agency, a way of taking responsibility for your final moments that helps to give the writer a sense of peace and satisfaction. Plus, jisei offers unique insights about life that we often take for granted or overlook entirely when we don't view death as a part of life. But that's what I think. And now, I would love to hear what you think of jisei. Email me at marissadelefarfalle@gmail.com. If you don't follow me on Twitter, you can do so at @marissad13 or find me on Instagram at marissadf13. I also have a Buy Me a Coffee page, and if you'd like to buy me a coffee, you can do so at www.buymeacoffee.com/marissadf13. I would also really appreciate it if you could rate and review this podcast on Apple Podcasts, as it'll help a lot more people find out about this show. Thank you so much for listening and for all of your support. I will be back in 2 weeks with a brand new episode. Unless you're also listening to the Victorian Variety Show, in which case, first of all, thank you, and second, I'll have a new episode of that next week. Yeah, I know, it's confusing. But in the meantime, I'm going to leave you with an example of jisei written by Katsushika Hokusai in 1849. I chose this one partly because Hokusai is one of my favorite visual artists. You may have seen his Great Wave off Kanagawa or his 36 Views of Mount Fuji, but also because I think this is a great example of a short but powerful description of haiku that suggests what may lie on the other side, so to speak. Quote, "Being the dead man's spirit, I will go to the summer field for a recreation." End quote. Wow, right? So, thanks again. Please, please stay safe and peace out.
This podcast is written and produced by Marissa Delle Farfalle and brought to you by Anchor. Anchor is the easiest way to make a podcast. Learn more at www.anchor.fm.